Liz Crowe is on the line from Bristol. Hello, Liz.
Hi there.
Now, you're a well-known artist in the disability art community, so it says here, and we're going to talk about your latest work, which is now on show at Salisbury Art Centre. Now, you're bringing attention to the current changes in state benefits, amongst other things, by lying in bed. So is this a sort of John and Yoko for Pip, or a sort of more Tracy Emin-related activity? I'm sure you're going to reply neither, but just give us a little bit of context to it.
Ooh, it's a kind of mix of all of them, except that I'm there on my own. But I'm at the moment, I've got an installation at Salisbury Arts Centre called Bedding Out. And then at the beginning of April, I take up residence for 48 hours in a bed on a stage in the Arts Centre.
And what will you be doing for while we, presuming anyone can wander in at any time and just look on and see what you're doing? And what will you be doing?
Sleeping, chilling, zoning out. I'm going to be behind a red rope, so basically I'm a kind of exhibit for the time that I'm there.
So you're almost going to be an inanimate object?
Yes, I am.
Is this the portrayal of disabled people that you want to give?
I thought I'd bring a rabbit.
I'm sort of like a chair with legs and arms. And
so what I'm actually doing is looking at the way that we have these kind of public selves that I mean, for me, I kind of go out there and I try and be all energetic and busy and doing things. But then I come back and have this kind of hidden self where I kind of switch off, spend a lot of time lying down, a lot of time in bed, recovering in order to go out and do the public face. But I hide that because it's not kind of socially acceptable.
And this is the bed life that you're referring to, the idea that when we do see people with disabilities out in public, we're seeing them, you know, you maybe being sort of strong and garrulous and talkative and social, whereas, you know, for the vast majority of the time, we see they're in bed feeling dreadful. And we miss all that, I suppose, don't we?
I think it is that actually life is just more complicated than the kind of two-dimensional images we're given. So there's a pressure to kind of, particularly after last summer and the Paralympics, to be a kind of superhuman when you're in public. And if you're not that, if you're a claimant, then you're often cast as a scrounger. And to kind of deal with those kind of really unrealistic and dangerous labels, some people turn themselves into victims to try and say, look, my life is really difficult, you just need to help me. So what I'm trying to do is kind of find that space in the middle where we just acknowledge that life is more complicated. And if you look at the kind of personal life, the private bed life, that's actually, there's a kind of honesty in making that visible.
Does it feel risky putting yourself out there so vulnerably, really?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the most dangerous element is that people will look at me doing that and say, you see, it is bad, it is tragic, it's everything I thought it was and I told you it was. But what I'm trying to do, and I've got kind of safeguards in place, is show that actually life is just more complicated than any of the images that we're given. So we might even be superhuman some of the time, kind of, and we might actually be quite tragic even some of the time. Some of us might scrounge some of the time. But actually, there's a whole mix and match of those different elements. And nobody I know fits those stereotypes at all. So I want to get across that idea. But I'm also bringing in a series of bedside conversations where people gather around the bed. So not only do they see me doing the bed life, but we then have a conversation about the kind of questions that the work raises.
So rather than people kind of shouting at you from behind the rope, you're going to actually let, I presume, people at your own personal discretion, you'll invite them to duck under and the rope and come and have a sort of chat with you. Is that how it works?
What we've got is kind of scheduled conversations where people can sign up and they come along and there's about up to about 10 people around the bed, and we talk about the work and we talk about the bigger context, what's happening with benefits changes, the way that it's linked into a rise in hate crime and all sorts of incredibly broad range of issues. When I've done this before, we touched on art and activism and how we want to be represented and so on. But with this one, I'm also bringing an extra strand in, which is the virtual participation. Because last time I did it, I was contacted by quite a few people who said, this is great, thank you for making me visible. I'd really like to be there and visit, but I have my own bed life and so I can't. So this time we're going to have a live web stream throughout, but we're also going to have a Twitter stream that's already got underway, and there will be a specific Twitter-based conversation looking at the issues as well.
Are you trying to also build a kind of a bed life community from this now? Are you reaching out to other people who have this almost twilight life, I guess?
I think that's actually just happening kind of by default. In the Twitter feed that's been going on for just a couple of weeks, those connections are already happening. I mean, certainly when I started on this project, I had no idea that there are actually thousands upon thousands of us out there living this kind of life, because we are really isolated and we are really invisible in the public life. So that is part of what I want to do, is start connecting people, but also people who are incredibly marginalised and haven't had contact with the kind of debates that we often have in disability, understanding that actually, when they're missing out, when they're losing opportunities, it can't just be put down to impairment, that very often it's about the way that society is structured. And I want them to have a chance to tap into those kind of debates and understandings. One of the things that's really happened with the benefits campaigning, one of the surprising good things that's come out of it, is that I think there's been a re-emergence of a kind of movement of disabled people, a campaigning movement, with all sorts of new people kind of coming out of the woodwork who were never really active and involved in it before. And what we're seeing through social media is new campaigners and new methods of campaigning that people, even in a bed life, can actually join in and be active within it. So if I can kind of help that process along, that would be fantastic.
And I do hope they keep the central heating on in the gallery at night as well, otherwise you are going to get rather cold. They can be a bit drafty, art galleries, in my experience.
It's a converted church, so it's going to be big and cold
and creepy.
Quite weird, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this isn't your first bit of political work, I suppose, maybe I should call it. I know a few listeners may know you from 2008 and 2009, where you brought awareness to the disability Holocaust. And I know an hour of which you did that from the top of the fourth plinth at Trafalgar Square, dressed in full Nazi regalia. This is Anthony Gormley's fourth plinth project, wasn't it? So tell us a little bit more about that.
I did that. I'm not sure I'd ever do it again, but I did that because...
Well, stand on the plinth or wear Nazi uniform?
Probably both, but especially the uniform.
That's a sensible answer. Yeah.
I was actually coming up to the launch of a bigger touring installation about the Nazi campaign of mass murder against disabled people and about its contemporary relevance. And then the Anthony Gormley project came up. And initially I just thought, I want other people to know about this. We need to make sure disabled people are up there. So along with lots of other people, I kind of put my name in a hat and got drawn out of it, and was thinking, you know, it's kind of a one in a million chance, really, this, it'll never happen again, so I need to do something that counts. And I realised that it was coinciding with the 70th anniversary of that Nazi campaign, which was yet again completely invisible in the press, so I felt it was the obvious thing was to draw attention to that. And what I wanted to do was create a symbol up there that would shock people so strongly that they would have to keep returning to it and trying to work out what it meant for us now.
We've already on the show, actually earlier, Liz, we had the Comedians with Disabilities Act on, and they started to talk about the T4 project and the Disability Holocaust. We hadn't told them that you were coming on, we were going to talk about this. So it's already come up on the show. What was the Disability Holocaust?
It was the first official campaign of mass murder that took place under the Nazis, and it targeted disabled people, who effectively became a kind of pilot scheme for looking for an effective way to murder large numbers of people efficiently. And at least 250,000 disabled people were killed under that scheme, although I suspect the numbers were easily double that, and I don't think we'll ever know. I think the thing that brought me to it as a subject was not only that I wanted to bring forward this hidden history, but that when I read about it, the values that underpinned it, the idea that disabled people were worth less, that they were a burden, that their lives were, they suffered and would be better put out of their misery and so on. Those ideas felt really contemporary. And that was one of the primary things I wanted to look at in the work.
Why contemporary? Why now?
If we look at the kind of ideas that are being put forward to justify the benefits changes and the benefits cuts, if we look at the kind of messages that are there in much of the media...
Like what, Liz?
Well, there's been a very strong campaign in the media that claimants are fraudsters or they are scroungers, that they are too lazy to work, that they are a terrible burden on the taxpayer, that we must have these cutbacks because disabled people are fundamentally irresponsible and not worth as much as other people. And the same kind of language is being used that was used back then.
And actually, we in the research for, you know, talking to you, we looked at some of the posters and some of the slogans from back then, from during the Holocaust. And, you know, a slogan on one poster, life only as a burden, life without hope. A picture caption, a moral and religious conception of life demands the prevention of hereditary ill offspring. I mean, powerful stuff. But do you think that's relevant now?
Well, I think it is, because in the time that I've been working on that project, I suppose I assumed things would either stay the same or they'd get better, and I've actually watched them get worse. I think similar kind of ideas are being put across. I think although in the last sort of 30-odd years, we've found we're able to physically access social spaces better than we used to. You know, in the past, I wouldn't have been able to get into this studio, for example. Although on the surface those sort of things have improved, the threats that we're experiencing are actually a lot more subtle and out of the public eye. So if you look at the kind of debates towards assisted suicide and the kind of headlong rush towards that without serious debate, if you look at in vitro testing for impairment, if you look at the number of people in institutions, those kind of people on the margins, there's an onslaught against those groups.
To sort of round this up, I'm really intrigued to know, because I know this isn't the first time you've done this bedding, I suppose. I know you did it at the Spill Festival in Ipswich. I mean, what kind of things do people want to talk about? What's the most random sort of strange conversational topic you found yourself getting embroiled with, you know, with a group of strangers?
I think the thing that struck me more than anything was the range of the conversations. I don't think there was anything really, really out there, but the conversations ranged from benefits to newspaper coverage to hate crime to representation to whether there is a role for art in activism, how do we take direct action, what are the most effective ways of campaigning. I mean, it's just an incredible range. And what really struck me was how deeply a group of strangers were prepared to enter into that conversation and go away with a kind of resolve to actually act upon it.
Well, I'm hoping for some pillow fights next time around. I think this could be exciting. So can you give us the web address again before you go, Liz?
Yep, it's www.roaring-girl.com.
bbc.co.uk/ouch.